Later, the Chicago theologian subjected the text of Bush's 2004 acceptance speech to the Republican National Convention to the same kind of double-coding analysis. In addition to a single paragraph on abortion and gay marriage, early on, Bush spoke of hills to climb and seeing the valley below, an allusion to Israel's escape from slavery and Moses' vision of the Promised Land as described in Deuteronomy 34. Then, with respect to Afghanistan, Iraq, the war on terror, and the economy, he described losses overcome through hope, steadfastness, and faith. Only in Bush's culminating example, said Lincoln, did he name what he saw in them all. For as long as our country stands, he, Bush, proclaimed, people will look to the resurrection of New York City, and they will say, here buildings fell, and here a nation rose. Resurrection. Lower Manhattan may be a case in point, but it was not the point of the story. The president used the phrase, I believe, 12 times, added Lincoln, and two of the references were meant to justify his wars as holy. The first, I believe that America is called to lead the cause of freedom in a new century, prompts a question. Called by whom? The second helps answer that query. I believe freedom is not America's gift to the world. It is the Almighty's gift to every man and woman. The man in the White House was becoming America's preacher in chief. Domke, in God Willing and subsequent comments, flatly contended that Bush had pulled together a religious fundamentalist worldview with political language to create a political fundamentalism acceptable to Americans in the aftermath of September 11th. Liberty and freedom, Domke interpreted, were set out as the God-defined norm for which Americans were fighting, both in Iraq and in the War on Terror, and which Bush propounded as the ultimate remedy against both fear and terror. To Domke, the White House marketed the universal gospel of freedom and liberty as a blessing that the president attributed to God, therefore, in effect, sending an implicit message, sometimes almost explicit, that he and the U.S. government were carrying out God's own wishes. In a later analysis of Bush's September 2004 speech accepting the GOP nomination, Domke found the same clarion. I believe that America is called to lead the cause of freedom in the new century. 4 months later, Domke noted that in Bush's January 2005 State of the Union speech, the president had used the words freedom and liberty in some form 34 times, following 49 citations in his second inaugural address 2 weeks earlier. The president's linkage of freedom and liberty with divine wishes, Domke concluded, is indicative of how central an evangelical worldview is to his conception of the United States' role in the post-9/11 world. The U.S. government is doing God's work. As expert testimony, these remarks cohere powerfully around discomfort over Bush's sense of religious mission and seeming presumption that God speaks through him. Martin Marty commented in 2003 that after September 11th and the president's decision to attack Iraq, the talk that other nations found mildly amusing or merely arrogant has taken on international and historical significance. Appleby worried that Bush's global gospel of freedom and liberty was a theological version of manifest destiny. Kimball expressed concern about Bush's sense of mission, and Lincoln regretted that George W. Bush believes God has called him to be president. You won't hear him say so openly, of course, but he regularly conveys this to a core constituency, the religious right. Domke also elaborated that Bush's fusion of a religious outlook with administration policy is a striking shift in rhetoric. Other presidents petitioned for blessings and guidance. Bush positions himself as a prophet, speaking for God. In mid-2004, when George W. Bush was campaigning among the Old Order Amish in south-central Pennsylvania, the Lancaster New Era ran a report that he told one gathering, I trust God speaks through me. Without that, I couldn't do my job. That same summer, Time commented that however often Bush defends Islam as a religion of peace, His case for war now rests less on high-fiber geopolitical arguments than on the suggestion that the 3rd Infantry Division be used as an instrument of God's will to share the gifts of liberty with all people. No analysis of the intertwining of Bible and state in Washington can ignore this kind of accumulating evidence and interpretation. Initially, this twinning of religion and politics paid major political dividends in the public opinion polls. So did maintaining the public's dual fear and belligerence with presidential orations about evil ones, reports of new leads on this or that investigation, and upward and downward revision of the color-coded terror threat levels. Yellow, orange, then yellow again. Rhetoric from Washington so frequently interspersed sentences about Islamic terrorism and Osama bin Laden with references to Saddam Hussein and Iraqi evil that much of Bush's religious electorate muddled them into one dire threat and danger to the United States, as we will see.